Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
One of the things that a lot of you know about me is that I grew up a huge fan of professional wrestling as a child, as a college student, even as an adult. I would say that as I get a little bit older, I probably watch wrestling a little less, and maybe not for the reason that you might think. Some of you may think you watch it less, BA, because you're getting older and you're getting more mature and you appreciate a more erudite form of entertainment. No, that's not it. I still like professional wrestling style antics as much as I ever did. I just think that the rest of the world's becoming more and more like professional wrestling, that whatever kind of like weird drama that exists inside the wrestling ring, there's so much of real life now that looks like the wrestling world that it's almost like I get my fix for that somewhere else. Perfect example of that is within the SEC. I mean, I would say that the SEC over the last few years has definitely taken on, like a lot of the things in life, a lot of, you know, walks of life, has kind of taken on kind of a pro wrestling style drama, the twists and turns of the, you know, kind of the male soap opera, which is what pro wrestling has been kind of described as being. We see a lot of that in SEC football. From that standpoint, the Tennessee coaching drama and how that impacts UGA, perfect example of this. We wondered on yesterday show what Jeremy Pruitt's future was going to be. Would he find some way to save himself after a couple of the moves that had happened around Tennessee? The answer to that was a resounding no. What Tennessee fans do, you know, in response to this and how the program itself moves on to replace Pruitt's all fascinating. And I love coaching drama. I've told all of you that before. But in the age in which we live now, the age of social media and podcasts and streaming video and, you know, takes flying left and right all over the place, what was all already kind of a perfectly fun thing to do, which is react to coaching drama and, you know, programs firing a coach and moving on and hiring a new one, is made better when we also get a chance to go back and dig up some receipts of the past of kind of the ridiculous things that people like me, who kind of, you know, yell and shout into a microphone for a living, what we say when all of these things go down. One of the biggest kind of discussion points in all of this in terms of Jeremy Pruitt being fired as Tennessee coach happened around former Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray. He's also now an analyst for CBS Sports, and a lot of folks kind of dug up yesterday some things that Murray had said when Pruitt was first hired at Tennessee. A pretty vicious response from Paul Feinbaum, and a lot of fun. I think we call these freezing cold takes when a guy like Feinbaum gets it this wrong. I'm playing this for a reason, which I'll explain after this, but if you kind of missed the back and forth between Aaron Murray and Paul Feinbaum yesterday, let me see if I can encapsulate what happened, what, back in 2018, that kind of had people talking again yesterday. Here's kind of a synopsis of where we came from in terms of Aaron Murray versus Paul Feinbaum. Listen to this.
Honestly, I don't know if his personality is fit to be a head coach. I don't think he's the right guy to kind of be the CEO of a corporation. He's really good managing just a defense and being a defensive coordinator. He needs to prove to me that he can handle the whole ship.
First of all, I don't give two rips what Aaron Murray thinks about anything, but I especially don't care what he thinks about something that he knows nothing about. Aaron Murray wasn't even at Georgia at the time. He's carrying a torch for Mark Richt, and I think it was an affront to Coach Pruitt, who I think has been a phenomenal leader, and I think the fact that he has Philip Fulmer behind him makes it that much more compelling.
Based upon what we know, it is clear that Coach Pruitt did not adequately promote an atmosphere of compliance and or monitor the activities of the coaches and the staff who reported to him. Accordingly, today, Athletic Director Fulmer and I agree that we have no choice but to move forward with terminating Coach Pruitt.
And Aaron Murray was right. A lot of us were wrong. I will tell you, at the beginning, I thought he would be good. And then the few times I was with him up there, I came away more disappointed every time.
So I play that for a couple of reasons. First of all, shout out to Aaron Murray. It's hard to ever be that right about anything, to be so specific in why a guy is going to fail and out in front of that. And, you know, Feinbaum's response of, well, Murray wasn't at Georgia when Jeremy Pruitt was here. Listen, you can go back through the pages of Dog Nation, like the deep archives well below the surface of the earth and the Dog Nation vault. Some of that stuff related to Pruitt and his time at Georgia, especially the 2015 season, was as well-sourced and deeply reported as anything anything's ever been. It is not a very well-kept secret, the demeanor issues that Jeremy Pruitt had when he was at UGA. Aaron Murray wouldn't have had to have been at UGA at the time to know that. Folks even like me are, you know, are well aware of some of the stuff that went on there, because nobody was keeping secrets back then because of how ugly it was. But the other thing about that little mashup that I play, which I think is really funny, is Feinbaum's idea of, well, you know, Jeremy Pruitt's got Philip Fulmer behind him, and that's a real big, you know, value for him as he starts his Tennessee career. Listen, Fulmer being behind you only means that he's got a bullseye right in front of him to stab you in the back. As the, you know, the gal said a moment ago, that athletic director Philip Fulmer, you know, concurring that Jeremy Pruitt needs to be, you know, removed and fired because of a lack of institutional control there at Tennessee. By the way, Philip Fulmer himself is also out the door there with the Vols as well. So kind of a wild ride of people who thought that Jeremy Pruitt was going to be good, and ultimately to see him kind of, you know, kicked to the curb there yesterday. But the point of all of this, though, is, and this is kind of where we kind of get to where we need to go here today, and this is kind of where Georgia comes in on this, is that, believe it or not, Paul Feinbaum's response to Aaron Murray might not actually be the worst take of the Pruitt era getting hired as Tennessee's coach. And I'm actually kind of surprised that more people weren't, you know, talking about this yesterday. That's our role around here, to kind of tell you some of the things that other folks kind of forget about, because we keep receipts on everything. Former Alabama quarterback John Parker Wilson, who's now the color analyst on the Alabama radio broadcast. When Jeremy Pruitt was hired by Tennessee, JPW goes on the sports radio station in Birmingham, WJOX. And at the time, John Parker Wilson had a very bold claim about how good he thought that Jeremy Pruitt was going to be, and in fact used that opportunity to take a little bit of a shot at Georgia coach Kirby Smart. It is laughable now to make this comparison between Pruitt at Tennessee and Smart at Georgia, but apparently for John Parker Wilson, the former Alabama quarterback, it was not laughable back then. Let's go back in time and mock this.
I think he'll be wildly successful at Tennessee. I hope he has enough success that he can come back and be the head coach at Alabama one day. I think his ability to connect with people is something that I've never seen. You know, he's a great recruiter. You know, I just think he's going to do well. He scares me more at Tennessee than Kirby does at Georgia.
Whoa.
Wow. Georgia's going to be good, but I think down the road, Jeremy scares me more than Kirby does at Georgia.
Oh, how about that? John Parker Wilson way back in 2018 saying, no, the scary coach in the SEC is Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, not Kirby Smart at Georgia. And they didn't even kind of think that at any point in time anyone could have ever even made a statement like that, I think seems pretty laughable. You know, the notion that, well, Kirby Smart may have had a little bit of success at Georgia, but the guy that's going to have the real success, the guy that's going to scare the SEC, is going to be Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee. JPW way back then went into more detail about exactly why that was. Let's hear some more from him.
I just think him as a head coach, you know, not only recruiting, but bringing in other coaches, having a good staff, and, you know, we haven't seen Tennessee really good in 10 years. And I think his ability to get them back, I think he's got a higher ceiling than Georgia does. And I know the recruiting that they can do just down the road, an hour down the road in Atlanta, is pretty strong. Tennessee, when they were good, they were recruiting on a national level, and they were getting quarterbacks from everywhere. They were getting receivers from everywhere. I think Jeremy has the ability to do that.
So let me just say this, and obviously I have kind of mocking fun with stuff like this, because I always enjoy how former Alabama folks seem to love trying to take a shot at Kirby when they get a chance to. I think that's very interesting. That's very telling. But beyond all that, there's this. That the level of success that Kirby Smart has enjoyed, and yes, before the week is done, we'll kind of get into like what Booger McFarland recently said about him and some of the other stuff that's out there, you know, kind of downplaying some of what Kirby's done. You know, there's a way of looking at that for people that Smart has made it seem relatively easy at Georgia, and therefore it can be easily dismissed by a lot of folks, whether it be JPW back in 2018 or folks even now in 2021, that somehow it's less than what it is because Kirby has not yet won a national championship. But even being able to remain employed and be happily employed by the bosses who pay your contract, by the fans who support the program, you know, from 2016 here to 2021, that in and of itself is something, to say nothing of the fact that that Kirby Smart actually has some tangible accomplishments while being at Georgia. He's won the SEC. He's been in the college football playoff. He won a game in the college football playoff, something only a handful of programs right now can say they've done in recent years. That Kirby Smart has built something real at Georgia. It's real. It's permanent. It's going to last. How good is it going to be? We don't quite yet know yet. We don't really quite know what the ceiling yet of accomplishment is for Georgia, but it's the kind of thing that's going to last for a while. It's not one of these flash in the pan type things that comes in like a bright fire, burns itself out pretty quick the way that Jeremy Pruitt did at Tennessee. And so it's important to bring back up comments like what John Parker Wilson said there, not just to mock him, although we do enjoy doing that, but also because I think it's important to note there were plenty of people along the way that doubted Kirby's ability to build something at Georgia that was going to last. And yet here we are, New Year's Six Bowl, however many years in a row, trophy case, adding true accomplishments in there. I think that's an important thing to remember. Now, fair and balanced here for a moment. We'll certainly bring this to the forefront. That much the same way, you know, you mock Paul Feinbaum for his feud with Aaron Murray. You mock John Parker Wilson for his, you know, over-the-top proclamation that Jeremy Pruitt was going to be the next head coach at Alabama or whatever it was he said there. There are some people today mocking me for some of the things that I've said about Pruitt as well. And I'm not too big of a man to acknowledge that. Let me show you this Florida fan here who was good enough on Twitter, by the way. His username is Wheel Route 2020, which I guess you can do with what you will. But Wheel Route 2020 on Twitter says, I still remember at Dog Nation Daily saying Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee would end up being a bigger threat to Georgia than Mullen will ever be. And he gives kind of a sarcastic thumbs up emoji. Now, listen, we have given credit where credit is due. Florida won the game head-to-head, or I should say four-loss Florida won the game head-to-head against Georgia this season. You cannot take that away from the Gators. But the idea that Mullen, who was hired in 2018, along with Jeremy Pruitt, was hired the same year, the idea that Mullen has proven that he's a coach that's going to last and stick around the way that Kirby Smart has, I think Florida fans are kidding themselves if they think that somehow Mullen has won something by still being employed going into 2021 now that Jeremy Pruitt is no longer there. Yes, he outlasted Pruitt in terms of his job, but go back and look at what Matt Hayes wrote the other day. Look at what Florida fans say on message boards. Look at the coaches that were kind of kicked to the curb and the frustration that Gators fans had that Todd Grantham wasn't one of the coaches who were fired. You think that Dan Mullen, after leading Florida to a four-loss season this year, you think he's standing on really solid ground at the moment? You think that Florida fans are loving everything about the Gators program right now? So, yeah, he certainly lasted in his employment longer than Jeremy Pruitt did, but the idea that this season for Mullen was some sort of proof that he's going to be doing this for the next 20 years, when I would suggest Mullen's own camp kind of put the NFL rumors out there, you know, the Florida camp kind of had its own retort to those rumors, and you've got all kinds of things going on there. I don't know that Florida fans are any kind of position, or I should say four-loss Florida fans. I don't know that four-loss Florida fans are any kind of position to be patting themselves in the back for what they did this year. So there are a lot of takes out there. An SEC coach getting fired will certainly bring those to the forefront. I am not immune. Not everything that I said has worked out perfectly, but I'm not taking an L on this one. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Great to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or back on the radio today as well with our friends in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Love being with them each and every day. And, of course, the podcast version of the program, the original way to hear the show, the one that started it all on all the various podcast platforms. I don't even think Spotify existed when we first started Dog Nation Daily, or at least if it did, I hadn't heard of it yet. But it's a huge podcast platform. Now we're on there. We're in the Apple Player, the Google Player. People reach out to me all the time with all these podcast things they listen on that I don't even know about. Either way, we're just really glad there's a lot of ways for you to catch up with Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today. Huge thanks to our friends at ESOG for making the show possible as well. You know, they're a proud partner of UGA, makes them fun to do business with, good friend of ours here at Dog Nation Daily for a very long time. And when it comes to waterproofing issues, foundation issues, two of the things that can keep homeowners up at night, sleepless nights more than anything else, if you feel like you've got water creeping into your basement, your garage, your crawl space, something like that, or if you see those cracks showing up in your foundation, potentially the sign of a big issue. But when you have a big issue, you want a big solutions-based company on your side. That's exactly what Engineered Solutions of Georgia is. They've got two full-time engineers on staff that are dedicated to solving problems like the one that your home might be facing right now. The great news is they're also very easy to get in touch with. You can simply give them a call. Easy number to remember, dial 678-ESOG now. That's right, dial 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk to Connor Riley about Connor actually wrote about Jeremy Pruitt today in the comparison with Kirby Smart at DogNation.com. So we'll talk to him about some of that. We'll talk about the search for the Georgia defensive backs coach and kind of everything else that's kind of ongoing around the Georgia program. That's with Connor here in just a moment. Before that, though, Around the Doghouse, delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. And there has been a stat that has gotten some attention over the course of the last couple of days that many of you are aware of now, but I thought it might be appropriate for me to bring to your attention here. Tim Beray, longtime sports information director for Clemson, who's really kind of on social media, kind of a wealth of information related to Clemson and a lot of stuff around college football too, put out an interesting tweet related to Clemson now that Nolan Turner is coming back for the upcoming year. Can I see the tweet here from Tim Beray, former Clemson SID? He says, with All-American Nolan Turner announcing tonight he's going to return for 2021, Clemson will return all 11 starters on defense. 21 total defensive players who started at least one game will return for Clemson this year, including 18 who started multiple games. And obviously that's a reason why Clemson was kind of already a potential preseason number one team when the real polls come out. This, I think, only bolsters their claim to potentially be the number one team in the country. And, you know, we've kind of wondered out loud on this show of, well, when Georgia plays Clemson to start the season, is there a chance that even though Clemson's been a fixture in the college football playoff these last few years, is there a chance that Georgia might be the point spread favorite? And when you see all of this, you know, talent returning for Clemson defensively, you're left to wonder, well, maybe not quite so much. Maybe Clemson's still the slight favorite in that game against UGA. And there are probably some Georgia fans who kind of wish that some of the Georgia guys who were kind of on the fence about coming back that decided to leave, maybe Tyson Campbell comes to mind here, some of the guys that chose to leave, Jermaine Johnson choosing to transfer, maybe, that you wish, well, they would have made the decision to come back for Georgia, and you'd have had the full complement of Georgia defenders, kind of, you know, at least possible defenders, kind of getting together for the unfinished business run the way that the Clemson defense is apparently planning on doing that for 2021. And I get all of that. But let me just say this. For Georgia fans who look across that field, figuratively speaking, and see that Clemson defense with all that talent returning, please understand this, that when Clemson looks across the field and sees the Georgia offense, they're going to see a similar situation. Now, you're not going to say returning starters because you don't really measure offensive stuff that way. You measure it more with returning production. But think about what Georgia brings back in its running back room. Zamir White, James Cook, Kendall Milton still in the fold, Kenny McIntosh still in the fold. The rushing yards that Georgia had in 2020, it brings back for 2021. Think about the same thing when it comes to wide receiver. The young receivers who are doing big things for Georgia now take an extra year's worth of development. They bring that with them to 2021. One of the big anchors around the neck of Georgia the last couple of years that has prevented, I would say, success for the program has been a lack of returning production at the receiver spot. That is not going to be an issue for Georgia in 2021. Georgia brings its quarterback back as well, which in and of itself can be kind of a big deal here. So when Georgia fans look across the field at Clemson, they see a defense that brings a lot back for the upcoming season. As Tim Beray says there, they essentially bring everything back. But when the Clemson defense or Clemson fans look across the Georgia offense, they don't see a situation that looks all that different. This one's going to be a good one to open the 2021 season. It's Around the Doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza, America's most beloved pizza, real, authentic pizza made the Italian way. And we love our friends at Marco's for a lot of reasons. One of the ways in which we really value them is the care they take when it comes to the health and safety related to the folks who order their pizzas. The pizzas themselves are baked in a 450-degree oven, then delivered to you contactless, touchless after that, so you can feel really good. But the pizza that you're putting your mouth and serving for your family as well. Also great savings for you to think about as well. Find out more about all of it either on the Marco's app or check them out online at marcos.com. Really good to have Marco's Pizza delivering Around the Doghouse to us here today. Before we're done, a lot more thoughts on the Tennessee coaching search, how it impacts Georgia, the ways in which the drama for the Vols in Knoxville may only be just beginning. We'll do all of that. We'll give away a golden shoe today as part of our Gator Hater roll call. So plenty more fun before we're done on today's show. But for now, on everything going on around UGA, coaching search for the defensive backs coach, Dan Lanning choosing to stay, what might be coming next. Let's do all of that right now with Connor Riley. Good to have you with us. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So, Connor, the big news around the SEC and really in college football is the Tennessee head coaching search, and I certainly want to talk to you more about that because I think it's fun to talk about, but let's take care of some business related to Georgia before we get there. Let's put our serious, you know, kind of thinking hats on for a minute. Georgia now looking for a defensive backs coach. One of the things that I laid out on yesterday's show is the contrast that exists between, hey, someone like me wants to see Georgia pursue a Corey Raymond because that's kind of the biggest name defensive backs coach I can imagine in a position like this. You may say the same thing about Tavarus Robinson at Miami as another one of those big name defensive backs coaches you might be able to get. You know, Derek Ansley, the former Tennessee defensive coordinator, now that, you know, that staff is kind of being rebuilt here, maybe he becomes a little bit more of one of those big name options. But there's also the possibility that Georgia goes the route of Trey Scott, who did not have much of a resume when Georgia hired him and only spent time at North Carolina. Of course, he was hired by Ole Miss, but didn't ever really coach there. Dan Lanning was someone I'd never heard of at all. Glenn Schumann had never even been an on-field coach before Kirby Smart tabbed him in 2016. So, you know, given those two very different scenarios, which one do you think is most likely for Georgia when it pursues its defensive back as a replacement for Charlton Warren?
The second one, because you look at where Kirby Smart has sort of gone before. He likes to hire guys that he has worked with. Glenn Schumann fit that role. Dan Lanning fit that role as they were both support staffers at Alabama. Whereas a guy like Corey Raymond, and look, I know he interviewed with Georgia back in 2019 when this job first came open before Charlton Warren took it. I believe he's going to leave LSU when he ultimately decides to do it because, again, as great as the Georgia defensive backs job is, I think the LSU one is just as good, and you can say that. There are, I think, two names to mention that sort of fit that similar mold of Kirby's worked with these guys before, guys on the staff have worked with them before. Doug Belk, who is the current secondary coach at Houston, he worked with Kirby at Alabama in 2015 as a support staffer. And Marcus Woodson, who is the current defensive backs coach at Florida, he worked with Dan Lanning at Memphis. And it's interesting about Woodson.
You mean Florida State?
Yeah, he's at Florida State, but he was with Lanning at Memphis.
Yeah.
What's interesting about Woodson is that prior to taking the Florida State job, he had served 2 years in the SEC as a defensive backs coach at Auburn. So he has some of the credentials, I think, that you look for and you like there. But I think with what we've seen from Kirby Smart before, he likes to hire from a place of familiarity, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So that's sort of where I expect him to ultimately end up going.
So I think that there's a very interesting comparison here to, you know, when Nick Saban in Alabama had to make big coaching changes after the 2018 season. It seemed like Saban kind of prioritized experienced guys who had kind of done it before and were going to be good on-field coaches. I think there was some thought around the Alabama program that some of their assistants had leaned too much in the direction of recruiting prior to that, and Saban made some big changes with his 2018 staff. I think when it comes for the Georgia defensive backs coach situation, listen, if Georgia could hire Corey Raymond, I'd love it. You know, I guess your kind of Hail Mary pass there is maybe the situation in LSU is kind of untenable at the moment. Maybe someone like this looks for a chance to get out while he still can. But if that's not going to happen, then I'm going to tell you that I believe the on-field coaching component for the Georgia defensive backs coach for 2021 is more important than those, you know, very aggressive recruiting chops that someone like Raymond might have, because I don't believe that 2021 is a championship or bust season for Georgia. I don't believe that it is. I think the window for winning a championship remains open for really quite some time. But it's hard to imagine that Georgia will have better chances to win a national championship than it has this upcoming season. And you don't want a position group to be an Achilles heel there. Mm-hmm. So there's talent in place at Georgia. It's young, inexperienced talent. I would say for this 1 year, find the best on-field coach you can. Let him coach those guys up to at least not be a glaring weakness for Georgia, to at least be competent. And I think that very much keeps Georgia in the championship chase if that's the way that it goes.
Right, and we talk all the time about Kirby Smart being a defensive backs coach. And if you've ever been to a Georgia practice, you've seen him working with those defensive backs early on in practice and barking things out there.
I would say this, just to add to that, I don't want to cut you off. I want you to finish your point, that for those of us who've been lucky enough to see a few minutes here and there of Georgia practices, that Smart is as engaged in coaching as the most junior assistant on that staff, that he's running around as if he was in his second year of coaching a position. A lot of this is, as you said, with the defensive backs. He's as engaged and energized around that group as anyone. He is as hands-on as a head coach could possibly be during practice.
He is still at his heart a defensive backs coach, and we talk about recruiting and the importance of there, and yes, Kirby Smart's not going to hire someone who's an outright liability as a recruiter, but I think one thing to keep in mind here, you mentioned Terrion Arnold yesterday and the importance there with him. From reading and talking with Jeff Sintel, Kirby Smart's been as big a part of that recruitment as any coach Georgia has on its staff, and he is still an excellent recruiter. He still knows what he is doing. He's one of the best recruiters in the country, regardless of whether he's an assistant or a head coach. So I think his chops in that aspect, especially as someone who is rooted in defensive backfields, I think allows you to make the best possible hire you can to sort of help that on-field product, rather than, say, if you're looking at a school like a Florida or schools that are trying to make that next step that maybe do need to lean more into that recruiting side of things to make up the talent gap.
I think keeping Dane Lanning was huge. At some point in time this week, I want to talk even more about this. I just haven't had time to yet. There's been so much going on the last couple of days. But his decision to, you know, kind of spurn the offer from Texas, this is how coordinators get more money. You get a big-time offer. You spin that into a better contract at Georgia. I don't fault him for doing so. I think it's thrilling news that he's decided to stay. It was not a great year a year ago for the Georgia defense, but that doesn't make me think less of Lanning as a coordinator. This is what power programs do. They keep quality assistants in place. Georgia, I believe, really flexed by keeping Dan Lanning, and I think Lanning, you know, does a nice service to Georgia by choosing to, as he said, run it back here for 2021.
Yeah, it was an interesting decision Lanning had to make there. I'm sure at Texas he was going to get more money than he was ultimately going to get from a raise at Georgia, and while you expect a raise to come for Lanning, Texas has more money than God. So the money aspect there leans towards Texas. At Texas, quite frankly, he was going to have more autonomy on the defensive side of the ball in terms of building, designing that defense, just because Steve Sarkisian is an offensive head coach and Kirby Smart, as we mentioned, with coaching defensive backs, he's very involved with the defense. And Dan Lanning also had Glenn Schumann as a co-defensive coordinator, and he is very involved in the building out of that defense. But I think from a forward mobility standpoint, which of these two jobs, Texas defensive coordinator, when you're facing an Oklahoma, an Iowa State, a lot of really good and very different offenses that you're going to see on a week-to-week basis, or at a place like Georgia where you already have the built-in talent, you do bring back almost your entire or a lot of contributors on your front seven, you do have to rebuild the secondary next year. But, I mean, Mel Tucker went from being a defensive coordinator at Georgia, and Georgia's defense wasn't all that great in 2018, comparatively speaking, and he still got a Power 5 head coaching job at Colorado and very quickly parlayed that into being the head coach at Michigan State.
That's right.
So from an upward mobility standpoint, I think it made a lot of sense for Lanning to stay at Georgia. And like you said, it's a big win because they don't have to deal with some of the scheme changes or personnel changes that are now going to come, that would come with having to find a new defensive coordinator.
And listen, if Lanning wants to make, you know, high $2 million type salary, Texas would have no problem paying him that. They certainly got the resources to do that. But what Lanning really wants to do is be a head coach. And it's not just moving to the Big 12 that makes that a risk, but anytime you move what I would call kind of parallel from one Power 5 job to another, you run the risk of taking a step back with your performance that potentially kind of moves you back in line in terms of being a head coach. The Mel Tucker track record shows you can leave Georgia and go be a head coach, even on the other side of the ball. Sam Pittman leaving as offensive line coach to go be a head coach at Arkansas. Charlton Warren leaving as defensive backs coach to go be Indiana defensive coordinator. That the Kirby Smart coaching tree is starting to kind of show some flowering here. And so for Lanning, who wants to be a head coach, there's no reason for him to leave to do that. If that's his ultimate goal, I don't believe he gets closer to being a head coach by being in Texas. I'm not telling you that's the reason why he ultimately chose not to go, but if he did, I think that'd be sound reasoning behind that.
Right, and you look at Georgia's got a pretty clear path to winning the ACC East, winning the SEC, getting in the college football playoff, that's going to get you hired elsewhere, along with all the other great stuff Lanning does away from the field in terms of relating to players, being a recruiter, being a developer of talent. I think Azeez Ojulari, a position player of his at the outside linebacker group, is going to be a first-round pick here in a couple of short months. That's a great feather to have in your cap. Whereas at Texas, he goes to Texas next year, he's not going to be one and done there. It's going to be a multi-year process for him to sort of move up and become a head coach through there because, I mean, just looking at the Big 12 next year, I think Oklahoma and Iowa State have better teams to start the season. So, you know, that stalls your theoretical path to head coaching time soon at Texas, where at a place like Georgia, Georgia wins big next year, which a lot of us think that they can potentially do. Lanning's going to get head coaching offers. Yeah. And if Georgia had had a little bit of a better season this year, he might already have been one.
Lanning's very good when he's speaking to reporters, things like that. He kind of looks like someone that, you know, to use the Aaron Murray phrase, CEO of a corporation. It's easy to believe that Lanning could fit that role. So I think he'll be a head coach at some point in time as well. He's not the only Georgia assistant who I'll say that for. By the way, speaking of that, let me transition to this. There have been rumors out there of Glenn Schumann. The LSU defensive coordinator search is ongoing. I think the Oregon search is still ongoing there as well. Schumann is an up-and-coming coach. He will be a defensive coordinator somewhere at some point in time, and I think probably a future head coach, maybe in his future sometime down the line as well, is at least a possibility for him. So let's kind of think about this here for a moment, whether it be the Schumann rumors that have been fairly prodigious, or as the coaching carousel continues to spin, maybe other, you know, Georgia assistants considered for some other jobs. How much more bracing for off-season coaching news should Georgia fans do, you think?
I think when you have a staff like Georgia's assembled and you've won at the level you've won at and you have the recruiters that Kirby Smart has, I think it's a reality you have to live with every offseason. I wasn't surprised, and quite frankly, I thought we'd hear more Glenn Schumann chatter around possible openings more so than we already have. I know the LSU job, they may have hired someone, may not have hired someone. The Saints defensive line coach, I know Oregon, they're taking a little bit more deliberate approach up there. So, you know, with Schumann, and Monty Rice has point blank said he thinks Glenn Schumann is the smartest coach on Georgia's staff. And again, to your point, I will not be surprised if he's a head coach somewhere in a very short order there. And then you look around, you know, Tennessee's restarting and they have to hire an athletic director first before they find that head coach. But again, like at some point, I believe one of these schools is going to be smart enough to say, hey, Del McGee, come run our offense, be a huge part of what we do up here, and make him an offer that he really can't refuse. But, you know, every sort of year that Georgia finds a way to hold on to Del McGee, I think that's a big win for this program, because from a recruiter, from a developer of talent, I don't think there are very many coaches better in the entire country than Del McGee at what he does.
But I talked about this yesterday. If I was Del McGee's agent, I would tell him, don't be an offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. We just saw Charles Huff leave running backs coach to go be coach at Marshall. I have a hard time believing that Huff's a better coach than Del McGee is, and I'm not saying that to disparage him. I'm just saying that when you have the Alabama name next to you, that's a fairly nice line to have on the resume, given how much success they've had. I think to go call plays is kind of a tricky situation. It only invites potential problems because calling plays is not easy. If I was Del McGee, if I was his agent, I would tell him, listen, your running backs coach at Georgia, you'll have your chance at one of these, you know, group of five jobs at some point in time, and I think that he'd interview very well for one of those. I don't believe McGee has to become an offensive coordinator to eventually become a head coach.
How much of that is because you recognize the value he brings as Georgia's running back coach, though?
Yeah, I mean, I'm closer to the situation, mm-hmm. so therefore I see that. But at a certain point in time, you know, I would say that, I mean, I feel like we see non-coordinators getting hired as a little bit of a trend. I mean, I don't know that it's an overwhelming trend as of yet, but Shane Beamer, Sam Pittman, Charles Huff, that, you know, the notion that you have to take the step to the vice presidential role to eventually be the guy in charge, the person in charge. You know, I don't know that it's quite that same way based on the maneuverings in the SEC the last couple of years.
So, say Tennessee offered him more money, $1 million, to go be their offensive coordinator and really run that program, at least on the offensive side of the ball, you tell him not to take that?
If you want to be a head coach, I mean, I know it seems counterintuitive, but if you want to be a head coach to go call plays for a program that's had trouble on the offensive side of the ball now for a decade would be a pretty risky choice to make, I believe.
Got to swing for the fences.
Yeah, maybe you do. Speaking of Tennessee, let's finish with this. So I know you wrote about Jeremy Pruitt here today. I kind of had some fun with this off the top of the program. I mean, I haven't said this yet, but I'll just say this as a way of kind of kicking it off to you. I don't think Tennessee should have fired Jeremy Pruitt, and I think that the situation's about to get even worse because they did. What do you make of all of this?
there's a clear lack of leadership at Tennessee, and it's not just at the head coaching position. It is not just at the athletic director position. It starts all the way at the top of that university and trickles all the way down. You saw that in the 2017 coaching search, and sort of this sort of comes home to roost there with the uprising after the Greg Schiano hire, which admittedly wasn't a very inspiring hire, but you sort of see what kind of damage that has done. It has continued to erode the leadership issues there at Tennessee, and now after the coaching carousel sort of comes to an end here, Tennessee decides to move on from Jeremy Pruitt because it thinks it's found some recruiting violations, which I guarantee you almost every major college program in the country, if they really wanted to dig around and find stuff, they could. It is, you know, a stunning decision to move on this quickly from a coach who had admittedly one very bad year, and I was as critical as Pruitt as anybody. And while largely I agree with the assessment Aaron Murray made, and especially as someone who was around the Georgia program in 2015, but this just isn't how you run a big-time college football program. And I know Tennessee is closer to Nebraska than it is anything else, in that it is harkening back to those glory days of the 90s. But last time at the SEC, Tennessee won the SEC East, I was 13 years old. I am 26 now and turned 27 in a month. They are so far from what they believe that they are, and it is just at this point, it's not surprising that they continue to have this delusion that, hey, they're one good coaching hire away from getting back on top, from feeling like 98 again, when the reality is they have to start at the very root of the problem, the leadership issue and the lack of it there in Knoxville, and figure it out from there.
So let me just say this really quickly. Let me see how succinct I can do this. That I think that you can actually trace every problem that Tennessee has back to the Lane Kiffin hire. They hired a young coach who was probably not ready for that job, and to make him seem more appealing, they gave multi-year contracts to a bunch of assistants. Well, when Kiffin bolted after a year, they couldn't afford to buy all those contracts out, so they therefore had to choose a coach who was willing to work without selecting his own staff, and that's someone like Derek Dooley, if those are the waters you're swimming in. Well, by the time the Dooley era came to an end in 2012, they weren't not only were they recruiting poorly, they'd essentially stopped recruiting. There's all kinds of reporting that exists out there about that. So Butch Jones, for as much as a joke as he was, actually inherited a program that was at low a point recruiting-wise as an SEC program can be, and he had a hard time building his way out of that. And so whatever Jeremy and Pruitt inherited was the impatience brought on by failed coach after failed coach after failed coach, bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. I think Murray is right that the demeanor for Pruitt is very much in question. We've brought that up on this show many, many times. But some of what Pruitt has dealt with at Tennessee is actually not his own
fault. Oh, it's an institutional failure. What happened yesterday, well, yes, it is on Jeremy Pruitt to an extent. The seeds to that were planted long, long ago. Again, this is a program who, since their last SEC title, this will be their fifth head coach that they've had. Georgia has five SEC titles in that same time. For all the talk about, you know, can they recruit and whatnot, Tennessee's a pretty – with the explosion in the population in Nashville, and Memphis has always been a very good college football or high school football town, you can recruit well in there. Jeremy Pruitt made inroads, maybe not significant as you would like to see, but he said – he saw that you could get a lot of really good players out of the city of Atlanta. And so, in theory, Tennessee's not far away. The problem is they just refuse to get out of their own way to sort of bring in, I think, a responsible, mature head coach – that is willing to lead them down the path they need to say, hey, this isn't going to be fun. It's not going to be easy. We're going to have some growing pains. And the first sign, you saw it under Butch Jones, where they and Mike Griffith, I can hear him now, back-to-back nine-win seasons, ranked in the top 25 both years. The first sign of growing pains Butch Jones really had there at Tennessee, they cut bait and ran from him.
Yeah.
The first sign Jeremy Pruitt had growing pains in the middle of a pandemic when Tennessee, we remarked this offseason, they were hit as hard as anybody in that preseason stretch, was hit hard by that. At the first sign of growing pains, the first sign of trouble, they just throw their hands up in the air and say, well, this guy's not it. We got to go find somebody else. You talk all the time about millennials, you know, not wanting to stick things out and tough things out, but these boomers up there at Tennessee, anytime something doesn't look like it's going their way, instead of like sticking it out and saying, hey, we made this decision knowing it's going to be a decision for the long haul, they turn at the first sign of trouble and run. And that's why Tennessee continues to find itself in this situation.
And here's the last point I'll make in regards to this. And speaking of being an agent, I sound like I'm being Jeremy Pruitt's agent, but Tennessee also got the worst end of the stick in terms of the two added extra games to the SEC. They came away with a much more difficult schedule than they were initially supposed to have. They already play Alabama every year, Georgia, Florida every year. That's already pretty tough. And they got, you know, I'm even trying. I'm trying to Texas A&M and Auburn, the two games that got added, right? So they got added two teams that were ranked preseason top 15 to a already 8-game SEC schedule that featured Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. So some of what Tennessee dealt with in 2020 was kind of the natural regression to the mean that was already expected to take place, plus a schedule that got tougher because of the two games that was added. I feel like that needs to be a part of this discussion as well.
So I would push back on there a little bit. Do you know how many double-digit losses Kirby Smart has in his 5 years at Georgia?
Probably four, five.
Seven.
Okay, yeah.
Do you know how many Tennessee had this year?
I think they had six in a row at one point.
They had
right?
All of seven of their losses this year were by double digits.
Yeah.
Jeremy Pruitt, I believe, 16 and 19 in his 3 years as the head coach there. 16 of those 19 losses came by double digits. Now, I know you're playing Florida, Georgia, and Alabama every year. But their losses, they were uncompetitive.
Yeah.
And you even look at some of the numbers. During that six-game losing streak, I think they outscored 105-7 in the second half of those games. While, yes, I've just railed on the institutional problems there at Tennessee, there were some on-field stuff that was really discouraging there. Specifically, you look at the quarterback situation, it is no more figured out than it was when Jeremy Pruitt got in there. We thought Harrison Bailey was going to be the guy for them. And even this year, when it was clear they had a chance to play him, let him get those reps and develop, they weren't even really all that committed to that. So as much as Tennessee off the field has done this to itself, Pruitt had some real flaws here as well that I don't think we had seen enough from him that he had been growing for it.
Connor, great stuff. Thanks for being here. By the way, I'd invite folks to check out the comparison that Connor did with Kirby and Pruitt there at dognation.com today. And, of course, we'll look forward to catching up with you on our program again very soon as well.
Yep. As always, it was a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So before we get – I want to talk more about the Tennessee situation. Connor brings up some pretty good points there. Before we get to that, let me also remind my friends at MyBookie. You know, we're heading towards Conference Championship Sunday in the NFL. I think four pretty good teams, two really good matchups. Obviously some confusion about the status for Patrick Mahomes and, you know, interest to see, you know, what Buffalo does back in this spot for the first time in a while. And, of course, Brady going on the road to Lambeau. That's a ton of fun. A lot of you excited about that. No better way to – add more excitement to your football watching weekend and to get some action down on the game with my friends at MyBookie. The reason why I recommend MyBookie is because they are known for the number one player perk, the best player perks in the entire industry. They want to thank you for your business. In other words, that means when you make your first deposit, they're going to give you a big deposit bonus back up to 50%. That means you put $1,000 in, they'll give you $500 back. You've got more money in your account than you started with before you even make your first wager. So here's how you take advantage of that. Use the promo code Dog Nations, all one word, spelled D-A-W-G. Use the promo code Dog Nation. You get the big first deposit bonus. After that, you play, you win, you get paid with my friends at MyBookie. Find them on the browser. Just type it in there, and they'll do the work for you. Then after that, use the promo code Dog Nation. Get a big first deposit bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. But you got to use the promo code Dog Nation with MyBookie. All right, a few things related to the Tennessee coaching search. I'm going to try to end the firing of Pruitt and everything else. Let me push back on something here really quickly. Not everyone that's listening right now is going to like this, but I want to defend Tennessee fans for a moment, because there's this attempt on the people who tried to push Greg Schiano, the now Rutgers head coach, former Ohio State defensive coordinator, Tampa Bay Bucks head coach, the folks who were trying to push him for the Tennessee job before, now that Pruitt has failed, are trying to run a "See, I told you so" campaign related to Pruitt's firing. Now, all we know is that Pruitt didn't work. We don't know, nor will we ever know, if Greg Schiano would have worked or not. So let's not fall for a logical fallacy here that Pruitt failing means Schiano would have worked. There's a very good chance that Pruitt did not work. I think with more time, maybe he could have. But just because Pruitt didn't work after these years does not mean Greg Schiano would have been more successful. There's frankly nothing to prove that whatsoever. And boy, there's so much of this in life these days, you know, where people who have kind of proclaimed themselves to be experts within the world of columnists or, you know, other kind of college football reporter types, whatever else, kind of question the Tennessee fans, saying, "Who are you to doubt who I think should have been the Tennessee head coach?" When these media types are not stakeholders in that Tennessee program. Here's my only point. And listen, Tennessee probably has its own show. It's the host of that show whose job to kind of stick up with the Vols here. But I will say this. I think Vols fans have a right to pick their own coach. I think Vols fans have a right to say, we'd rather have this guy than that guy as our coach. And, you know, I think it's very telling who's kind of coming out of the woodworks today to try to do a "See, I told you so" campaign related to Greg Schiano when we have no evidence whatsoever that Schiano would have been successful. Frankly, a lot of the reasons that Tennessee fans didn't want Schiano as Tennessee coach are just as valid now as they ever were. I also think this is really interesting. So Chris Lowe, respected reporter from ESPN, has a piece up about the notion that maybe it would be worth Tennessee's trouble to, I think the phrase that Lowe uses here, to quote, kick the tires on Lane Kiffin. Now listen, there is no, I talk about pro wrestling off the top of the show. There would be nothing more pro wrestling than all of this coming full circle. I said a moment ago, I think a lot of the Tennessee issues started with the hiring of Lane Kiffin. To think that Kiffin might now leave Ole Miss, come back to Knoxville, is almost like more pro wrestling style drama than can ever possibly be believed. But there is a question I have about this, and I'm always fascinated by the big, for lack of a better phrase, blue check types within the media that have no problem whatsoever with Lane Kiffin. In fact, they love Kiffin. They love touting him for jobs. Kiffin's very open with the media. He invite any reporter that wants to go interview him for 6 hours. He's just, you know, very open with the media. So whatever transgression that he ever has in his past, either alleged or confirmed, never seems to be a problem. Yet by comparison, nobody seems to want to touch Hugh Freeze. And I'm just not quite so sure that's fair. And yes, I know everything that Hugh Freeze has in his background. But here's my question. Should Hugh Freeze never be allowed to coach at the major college level again because of that, with all due respect to Liberty, who I don't really quite consider to be at quite that level? I mean, is it really fair to lock out Hugh Freeze forever, as bad as the stuff that he did? And frankly, we can all kind of cite both, whether it be NCAA stuff or you know, off-field stuff, some of the problems that he had. But do we give any chance for someone to maybe make their life better, to learn from their mistakes, to want to get a second chance and do better with that second chance? Generally speaking, I'm in favor of second chances for coaches and players and everything else. And frankly, if Tennessee hired Hugh Freeze, I wouldn't mock them for it. I think that, you know, if Freeze has turned his life around, the notion that he should be barred forever from coaching the SEC, given some of the other guys who've, you know, found their way into employment in the SEC, I think that's probably a little bit ridiculous. One more thing, and then we're going to kind of wrap this portion of the discussion up. So I think the ultimate takeaway from the discussion that happened yesterday around the Tennessee program was a question that was directed towards Philip Fulmer. And Fulmer was asked how the Pruitt era will be remembered. And Fulmer said, well, the recruiting's been good. And, of course, everybody has a big laugh at that, given the fact that the whole reason supposedly we were even meeting yesterday to fire Jeremy Pruitt is because of improper recruiting tactics. So that's one of those kind of quotes that'll be remembered forever and forever and forever. And Phil Fulmer's got a lot of those on his career. I guess I'm very curious about how Fulmer's legacy will be tainted by all of this. His tenure as Tennessee athletic director celebrated when he was first hired. Vols fans thought he was going to be the guy to lead Tennessee back to the promised land. And yet ultimately, I think that Fulmer leaves Tennessee worse than he found it as athletic director, even as bad as it was when he first took over. How many dings on a reputation can one guy have before his legacy at that program is kind of tarnished forever? I wonder for Philip Fulmer what his ultimate way of being remembered by folks close to the Tennessee program will be. One thing I know for sure, the way in which all of this goes down with Jeremy Pruitt will not help that former legacy. We'll make that your SEC through. And let me also remind you, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, we are always looking for folks to contribute to our Gator Hater Roll Call. We love honoring Georgia fans who love being Gator Haters. In fact, I've got a long list of folks who've been sending me stuff that I want to make sure I get out to you here on the air. So if you've sent something to me but you haven't heard your name mentioned, just be patient if you can, please. We'll be honoring you here pretty soon on that. Just at Dog Nation Daily, show me why you're a Gator hater. Tell me why you're a Gator hater. We'll make you part of our Gator Hater Roll Call to close the program out today, including today's winner, our buddy Hayes Calloway, who sends this to me on Twitter. Beautiful picture of a great collection of Georgia memorabilia. See a lot of tickets there on the bulletin board. No doubt a lot of tickets there to the game in Jacksonville being shown off by him. So, Hayes, congratulations. You are today's Golden Shoe winner. Our buddy Eddie loves to see that, the Dog Nation Daily mascot. I love to see all of you as well. In fact, I'll see you back here tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG.